farm with their living with Bill Callahan, aka Smog.
Okay.
Yeah.
interesting turn of events to start with today. Congresswoman Lauren Boebert's public sex act caught on video might end up costing Republicans control of the House of Representatives in 2024. And it really brings me great pleasure to tell you that. Now, this depends on so many different things, but let me give you the gist of the situation. The other day, last week, Lauren Boebert, as I'm sure have heard by now, was kicked out of a theater performance of Beetlejuice. Initially, there were reports that she was vaping and causing disturbance, filming the performance, which you're not allowed to do. It later turned out that she was actually engaging in sex acts with her dates, fondling his genitals in public. It's on video. It's all pretty wacky stuff. Even though Republican voters are known to be extraordinary hypocrites, where they will impose their morality on others and claim they are family, Christians, all of these different things. There is still a real question as to whether they will still vote for Lauren Boebert anyway, despite her not embodying that image which they espouse. But let's imagine for a second that at least a few hundred voters in Lauren Boebert's district will choose not to vote for her or vote for her opponent at Frisch in November of 2024 because of this incident. I think that's reasonable. Remember, she won re-election by fewer than 600 votes, and there's a good Business Insider article that reminds us of the numbers and of all of this. If the margin was 550-something, something like that, votes, 570, call it 600, 350 voters switch their votes from Boebert to Frisch next November because of this unsavory incident, as they might describe it. This incident alone could make it so that Lauren Boebert doesn't get reelected. Okay, but that's one race. What about costing Republicans the entire House? This is where it gets super interesting. Axios has a new piece looking at the new forecasts for the Senate and for the House of Representatives in 2024. And it turns out that while Republicans may regain control of the Senate in 2024, in the 2024 elections, which would become effective in January of 2025, Of course, in the House of Representatives, things seem to be tilting the other way. The other way being Republicans control the House today, but the polling seems to be favoring Democrats in the November 2024 election. Look at the thin margins by which this would be the case. To win back control of the House, Democrats only need to flip a net five seats. A new House race analysis rates 11 seats as toss-ups, 7 held by Republicans and 4 by Democrats. So here's the bottom line. Very often in these midterm elections or general elections, when it comes to the House, It's not likely to come down to one or two seats. It's often one party is plus 30, and there's 10 toss-ups. Even if the party in power loses all 10 of the toss-ups, there's still 20. So the scenario where one seat determines control is very unlikely. With under a dozen of these toss-ups, and the toss-ups roughly split between Democrats and Republicans, and only a five-seat margin for Republicans in the House right now, control of the House quite literally could come down to Lauren Boebert's seat. It's not going particularly well for her in terms of fundraising. Now she engaged in a public on-camera sex act, chaos. It's hard to believe this is going to help her. And so indeed, Lauren Boebert genital fondling in public might be what costs the House of Representatives in 2024. And if indeed that is the case, it would be absolutely hilarious and delightful in every single way. Because it would be, is it a you live by the sword, you die by the sword? You live by, hey, these are our moral values and Christians and anti-abortion, except it's a 36-year-old grandmother engaged in fondling. And then it costs them control. That would truly be a delight, and it couldn't happen to a nicer person, really. In all seriousness, we all must vote. Including our friends in Lauren Boebert's district. Check out Adam Colorado. That's Adam Frisch, almost defeated her in 2022. Let's make it a reality in 2024. One more note about the Bear incident. In the media, corporate media,
etc.
The incident is being referred to often as the vaping incident.
The vaping was one of the least notable things about that incident.
So let's not call it the vaping incident.
Let's call it the public genital fondling by 36-year-old pro-life Christian grandmother Lauren Boebert.
Okay, that's what we should be referring to. Sort of like we refer to Trump as the civilly liable rapist, twice impeached, four times indicted, failed former president.
Right, that's really what he is.
This is the way we need to refer to Lauren Boebert. This is not the vaping incident.
This is the public genital fondling incident.
Rudy Giuliani has received some disastrous news.
He owes his lawyers $1.4 million,
and they want the money.
What is it with MAGA people not paying their lawyers?
Even MAGA lawyers not paying their lawyers.
This is truly rough stuff for Rudy Giuliani.
The New York Times reports Giuliani sued.
Over unpaid legal fees by lawyer who led his defense.
Robert Costello's law firm is seeking to recover more than $1.4 million.
He trained under Mr. Giuliani and was his loyal defender.
Think about the fall from grace that you experienced when you have.
I guess we would call them proteges of sorts.
They train under you, they learn law, law and order, call it what you will.
Ultimately, you get yourself into trouble because at the end of the day, MAGA means making attorneys get attorneys.
You hire one of your disciples and you don't pay them.
And next thing you know, your protege is suing you for over a million dollars.
It is really something else.
The New York Times reports Rudolph Giuliani already under criminal indictment and at risk of losing his law license.
Is now being sued by his own lawyer.
The lawyer Robert Costello signed on to the lawsuit brought by his firm Monday to recover more than $1.3 million in unpaid legal fees.
Development deal stunning blow to Mr. Giuliani as he nears a financial breaking point.
Giuliani owes nearly $3 million to various law firms, including the one where Costello was a partner.
Giuliani had repeatedly sought a financial lifeline from his client, Mr. Trump, who had offered vague promises to pay up, but had largely refused to do so.
Much of what Giuliani owes arose from his work for Trump in the aftermath of the 2020 election.
Isn't that sad? Really a demise of his own doing.
Giuliani racked up legal bills while battling an array of criminal and congressional investigations, private lawsuits, and disciplinary proceedings.
That cast a harsh light on his bid to keep Trump in office despite losing.
So this really is a new low.
Of course, MAGA will see this as a betrayal.
This is disloyalty.
How could Giuliani's own protege now sue him for seven figures of unpaid legal fees?
Well, listen, Giuliani is now without allies.
On Newsmax, they continue to promote the Rudy Giuliani Legal Defense Fund, is what they're calling it.
A nice little Media Matters write-up,
which explains
Newsmax has promoted its Rudy Giuliani Legal Defense Fund 50 times.
Newsmax host Sebastian Gorka said, quote,
God bless Newsmax for initiating this drive.
Because he is fearless and he loves America,
we have created this website.
I would wonder, of course, if God is in charge and Giuliani is godlike,
why didn't God prevent Giuliani from making these harebrained decisions to get involved in this nonsense in the first place?
Newsmax is trying to help.
It's unclear how much money is being raised just for kicks.
Let's take a look at the website on which they are raising money for Rudy Giuliani.
Oh no, the website is down.
Well, that adds insult to injury.
The website appears down.
I'm unable to pull up the website.
Rudy Giuliani's legal defense fund.
All right, well, listen. Newsmax is doing its part.
This is very bad news for Rudy Giuliani.
And again, I just am an empathetic person by nature.
My empathy
instinct is kicking in.
I don't know why.
I feel a little bit bad for what's happening to Rudy Giuliani,
even though it truly is of his own doing.
It really is.
But I feel a little bit bad for the guy.
I don't know why. Maybe people can write in and comment.
Why do I feel a little bit bad for Rudy Giuliani
when he's just as guilty of putting himself in these positions as Trump and everybody else?
Let me know what you think.
We're going to take a quick break.
And then we will have some stunning admissions
from some of our favorite heroic and principled elected officials
after this extraordinarily short break.
Lest anyone forget, our program is primarily funded by our audience.
You may not be getting the full experience right now.
If you just heard some ads between the last segment and this one.
Or if you're not getting access to the bonus show, if you don't even know what that is.
The bonus show, but you and I make money, everybody else who makes money is bad.
Then consider signing up at joinpacman.com. You'll get the daily show stripped of all commercials, whether you want audio or video, both are available to our members.
You'll also get the daily bonus show and so many other great things, including access to the website members only soundboard,
which contains most but not all the clips I have on my soundboard.
That one is definitely on the soundboard.
JoinPacman.com is the place to do it.
Appreciate so much, flattered truly.
About all of the people that have been signing out.
Check it out.
All right.
A Republican has now admitted.
Yes.
Donald Trump could have told the rioters to go home
much earlier than he did.
And that would have prevented a lot of the violence on January 6, 2021.
That horrible day of the Trump riots.
This is an important admission.
Not because it is news to us.
Obviously, Trump could have stopped the riots sooner.
He could have prevented them in the first place.
By the way, by not starting to say, hey, let's go march on the Capitol
and take what's mine, or whatever the case may be.
But it is still a notable admission because not many Republicans have been willing to say it.
Here is Congressman Tim Burchett.
Who admits Trump could have stopped the violence.
He's being interviewed in this clip by CNN's Jim Acosta.
There's a bunch of crosstalk at the beginning.
But eventually, Burchett says,
he could have told him to go home.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, but none of that would have happened. None of that would have happened except that he lost the election. When your Democratic opponent won the election, that person said, you know what, Tim Burchett won the election. I'm going to go on my way and move on with my life. Donald Trump didn't do that. So I'm still lying. I'm still waiting on your call.
Okay, well, if President Trump had gone on the news and said, y'all cool it, you're right there, absolutely, 100%. It put people's lives at risk, and I thought it would have been a great opportunity to bring the race, but he didn't. Nobody else did either. And it just went on, and it went bad to worse.
You know, it's not true that nobody else did either.
There were plenty of us on the left,
as well as police officers, as well as all sorts of others in Washington, D.C.,
saying, hey, go home. It's time to go home. Get out of here. You don't need to be here. Just go home.
It's just that the rioters only were listening to Trump.
And we have proof that Trump could have prevented the violence.
Because when he eventually did say go home,
what was it, 4 hours in?
I think the entire day is like a blur, but I think the violence started between 1 and 1.
I think sometime between 4 and 5:30, Trump issued his video saying, all right, go home, go home.
And then they went home.
So they know they would have gone home
because they did go home when Trump finally said it.
Now, Burchett is not the hero in the world.
He also has wacky views on different things. I think he thinks there's been a UFO cover by the U.S. government
for 60 or 70 years or something along those lines.
We don't say this is now our hero,
but he is something that is the obvious consensus among those willing to think about it honestly.
And so then it only raises the specter of this question.
To what degree is Trump responsible for the fact that the riots happened in the first place to begin with?
And the answer is, to some degree, we may find out in a court of law.
Ultimately, where that will go in terms of holding him accountable, we all know that we don't yet know.
But good for Burchett for at least saying this.
He seems to be saying, Nobody was out there calling for them to go.
That's a lie.
And we know Trump could have prevented this far earlier.
But this is nothing
as far as a revelation compared to what we learned yesterday about classified documents.
Let's talk about that next.
Donald Trump reportedly treated classified documents at his home in Mar-a-Lago
like scrap paper,
regularly writing to-do lists on them for staffers.
This is
stunning stuff.
ABC News has the exclusive.
Trump wrote to-do lists for assistant
on White House documents marked classified.
Molly Michael told investigators about the documents, according to sources.
Look at this.
One of former President Donald Trump's longtime assistants
told federal investigators that Trump repeatedly wrote to-do lists for her
on documents from the White House that were marked classified,
according to sources familiar with her statements.
As described to ABC News, Molly Michael told investigators that more than once
she received requests or taskings from Trump
that were written on the back of note cards,
and she later recognized the note cards as sensitive White House materials
with visible classification markings
used to brief Trump
while he was still in office
about phone calls with foreign leaders
or other international related matters.
Respect
for
documents.
Remember
how his entire 2016 campaign against Hillary Clinton
was predicated on how she couldn't be trusted in a lot of different ways. She couldn't be trusted because she would start World Wars 3, 4, and 5,
and she couldn't be trusted because of her handling of sensitive information, classified documents, and secret information.
And then we find out everything we found out about Trump.
And now the detail that he was
I'm going to stop short of saying he treated classified documents like toilet paper.
Okay.
We don't know that he did.
He did store many of the documents next to his toilet.
But he wasn't, as far as we know, using them like toilet paper.
But he was using them like scrap paper.
That we absolutely have learned here.
Now a notable element from this reporting. This is so funny.
The article reads,
let's put this up on the screen.
A Trump spokesperson said that
what ABC News was told
through what the person called illegal leaks
lacks proper context
and relevant information,
and that President Trump did nothing wrong,
has always insisted on truth and transparency and acted in a proper manner according to the law.
We've talked about this before.
When you don't like the content of the leaks, when you don't like the fact that they've leaked accurate information about you, you act indignant and insulted about the fact that there are leaks to begin with.
And that is exactly what is happening here.
This is the reaction of someone who knows the allegation is true.
Yes, Trump was using classified information, classified documents, or note cards as scrap paper.
We don't like that.
We're just going to go ahead and attack the fact that we know this in the first place.
And this is a classic move.
Remember, there are two parts to all of these stories.
There is the part of how much of this stuff is against the law.
And we are in the process of figuring that out.
And then there is all of the allegations about Hillary, Obama, Biden, all of the allegations about what the left was doing, had done, or would do.
Were actually confessions.
And the obsessive focus, relentless, on Hillary Clinton can't be trusted with these documents, those documents, or the other documents.
It was Trump who couldn't be trusted.
It was Trump who stored the classified documents in boxes next to his toilet.
And it was Trump allegedly using the documents as scrap paper.
That's where we are.
And by the way, the theme continues to be,
Trump won't stop confessing crimes on national television.
And that's where we're going next.
Yesterday's segment about Donald Trump's interview with NBC's Kristen Welker really got me thinking.
This guy just keeps confessing to crimes.
He would be better off if he did not speak rather than saying anything.
And it is indeed the case that Donald Trump continues to confess to many of the crimes for which he has been charged.
Now, this is new in the sense that after indictment number, now I'm struggling.
I believe it was after indictment number two.
But it might have been after number one, or it might have been after number two.
Trump went to, again, I think it was Bedminster.
and he essentially confessed to the crimes for which he had been accused, saying, I had a right to have all that stuff, presidential records, et cetera.
And we realized,
his actions actually are not covered by the Presidential Records Act.
Former president at the time.
He's essentially making a defense that is not a legal defense and confessing to the crime.
Well, there's a whole bunch of different examples of this.
And I'm going to remind you,
yesterday,
here is Trump.
We played this yesterday with Weston Welker.
Saying the entire plot to overturn the 2020 election,
everything that was done,
strong-arming public officials, trying to set up fake slates of fake electors.
He was directing all of it.
He admitted it. This was yesterday, from Sunday.
The election was rigged. Molly Hemingway wrote a great book. Molly Hemingway was highly respected and great. She wrote a best-selling book called Rigged.
Were you calling the shots, though, Mr. President, ultimately, as to whether or not I believe it was rigged?
Sure. It was my decision. But I listened to some people, some people said that. Like guys like Bill Barr, it was a stiff, but he wasn't there at the time. But he didn't do his job because he was afraid. You know what he was afraid of? He was afraid of being impeached. And was petrified to be impeached.
All right. It was my decision.
Now,
whether that's the facts talking or Trump's ego,
he seems to be confessing that it was all done at his direction.
Here's another example. Last week with Megyn Kelly's interview with Trump.
And this one, the topic was classified documents.
And again, Trump insisting, I'm allowed to have the documents.
We have a deranged guy named Jack Smith who's been overturned at the Supreme Court a number of times.
And he gets overturned. You know why he gets overturned? Because he goes too far. They don't even mention the Presidential Records Act. This is all about the Presidential Records Act. I'm allowed to have these documents. I'm allowed to take these documents, classified or not classified. And frankly, when I have them, they become unclassified. People think you have to go through a ritual.
You don't.
At least in my opinion, you don't.
Well, Trump's opinion, unfortunately, is not the law.
And again, this is a confession of Trump having documents that had not been declassified.
Because we know that telepathic declassification is not a thing.
And more seriously, we've heard from legal experts that the president taking a document does not declassify it.
And we also know that Donald Trump is on an audio recording.
Months after leaving the White House, showing documents to people in his home, saying this is secret stuff,
this is classified stuff.
So he knew that he hadn't telepathically declassified the documents.
So, as I've said before, he keeps confessing to crimes, but if Trump's lawyers try these explanations as legal defense, it is not going to go well with Donald Trump.
For Donald Trump, when the special prosecutor and prosecutors in general present their cases to juries.
They are going to explain to juries what the law is about classified documents.
And when the judge gives the jury instructions, if it gets to that phase,
we don't know that that's going to happen, but if we get to a jury verdict phase,
the jury will be instructed about what the law is.
And nowhere in the law does it say, remind that a president or former president can telepathically declassify documents.
It is also not part of the law that by simply absconding with documents,
a president has de facto or automatically declassified them.
I don't think that Trump, when he does these things on TV and just admits to crimes,
I don't think Trump's necessarily oblivious to the fact that he's saying he did the things he's being accused of.
It seems to me that this is a combination of Trump counting on becoming president again.
Acting as a pseudo dictator, hardening himself with a vague idea that by becoming president again, Trump simply won't have to deal with this or deal with the consequences of it.
In addition, he always thinks he's the smartest person in the room.
And this is why Trump's instincts are, sure, I'll testify under oath. Sure, I'll sit down with Mueller or whoever and let his lawyers panic and try to convince him not to do it
so far successfully.
Because Trump thinks he's the smartest one in the room
and he can convince whoever of his perspective.
And to some degree, Trump may understand.
He sort of is confessing to the crimes here.
But he and his lawyers are so smart and so slick
that once they get in front of a jury,
they're going to convince the jury that what he did wasn't against the law.
The hope obviously is
that is not the way it is going to go.
He knows also to some degree that his fans like that he's a criminal.
In their minds, in his mind,
these aren't real crimes.
These are political attacks from the left.
And he put the mugshot on a t-shirt and the entire thing.
But unfortunately, that doesn't matter in an actual court of law.
So we'll see.
I don't expect Trump to stop confessing to crimes in public between now and the start of his criminal trials. But at some point, there will hopefully be some kind of awakening about the fact that a jury, with a judge there reading what the actual law is to members of the jury.
Things go way differently than when you're trying to push around
Kristen Welker or Megyn Kelly or whoever on NBC or SiriusXM Radio or wherever the case may be.
Today we're going to be speaking with Mitchell Green, who's a professor of philosophy at the University of Connecticut and also author of the book Know Thyself, Value and its Limits of Self-Knowledge.
I really appreciate having you on today.
Looking forward to this.
Thanks very much for having me. So, when it comes to self-knowledge,
we've talked before, and as often happens in political circles, invariably the concept of Dunning-Kruger comes up, the idea that sometimes we lack the cognitive ability to notice
when we are not fully equipped to understand or explain something.
Some of the self-knowledge you talk about in the book is less about maybe factual shortcomings you may have, but more about the idea of really knowing ourselves in a societal context, in the context of, well, I know what I'm like in social situations.
Is that really me, or is there something else?
Talk a little bit about this concept and what might be some of the limiting factors on our ability to really know ourselves.
That's what I'm talking about, the challenge. quick readers with some of those concepts and those terms on the class.
It seems that in society, there are all sorts of places where we get ideas about who we might be, and obviously capitalism and a system of consumption that relates to products and services and how we identify with those and what they mean about us if we drive a certain car or whatever the case may be. That certainly seems to be a big part of this. In the political space, there's a lot of usage of you're pro family, right? And what do they mean by that? What do we think it says about us to say yes, I'm pro family or not? You know, in this Lauren Boebert situation over the last week, what it means to be pro family has certainly kind of been upended. It seems as though
Is it fair to say that all of these different sources can interfere with figuring out who we, quote, truly are, or is who we truly are quite literally sort of guided by these external sources to some degree?
That's a good question. I would go for first option for the first part, and a little bit more for some factor in the second option as well. I say the second option is that is who we are can sometimes be either guided by the choices that we make, because in my view, no one fixed essence at the bottom or each person that maintains constancy from life to lifetime. There's certain plasticity in the personality. So if you start to start from exactly new, because, for example, you have to try on a product or a new lifestyle involving product that you had tried before, right? Surprise yourself. You love it. And you have a change that you wish you would do. That was just, for example, on a bike ride this morning or here in the beautiful fall weather here in New England. You know, I was noticing that it was about 15 years ago since I started riding. There was a serious road bike. And I'm so happy that I found it. I wouldn't have expected it before. And so before 2008, I would enjoy it as much as anybody. So sometimes buying good products, like a nice road bike and so forth, can really make your life, your life, and help shape the person you are. However, there are other ways in which capitalism can convince us that we should be a certain way, and it's a new way of doing things more difficult, perhaps, to be able to support. So, for example, exporting goods is a difficult experience for me to go to the grocery store and say, I think I want to be the kind of person who can do technical rock climbing. I think depicted in this world, all the products. The problem is, as a matter of fact, I'm not going to take this picture if you're wondering a serious kind of climbing. So I think it's better we should not have money on such a thing. And I let it all sit in my garage and collect dust for years.
I'm very interested in getting your thoughts on, I guess this sort of relates to dualism, but it's really kind of a bodily continuity sort of question. In science fiction for a very long time now, there has been the idea of humans continuing to live by transferring their consciousness to some kind of technical element. And then either existing in a computer or in Richard K. Morgan's book, Altered Carbon, which was turned into a mini-series on Netflix. The idea is Your consciousness is contained in a device that goes in your spine, and you can simply move that up to another body, and then your consciousness continues.
So one of the things I've thought about is,
even if the technology existed to upload our entire conscious memory as of the moment you do it to some technical device and put it in another body or exist in the cloud,
to other people it might seem like it is your consciousness continuing uninterrupted from that day.
But to the person who's having it done, doesn't it split it at that point, and from the moment that the upload takes place, you and that upload diverge and start having different experiences? I don't think I would ever, if that happened.
I think others might see what they remember my consciousness being continuing,
but I don't think I would experience that.
So this is the topic of metaphysics of uploading. And it's gained a lot of philosophical interest in the last 10, 15 years. I guess I would say it's one thing to upload a lot of information stored in the central nervous system, not to a server. Maybe it's something for some time before they pass away, so they'll have it found.
Yeah.
I would say it's an open question that I don't know how to answer, whether or not they could successfully upload all the information in the central nervous system, whether the new thing is that these sensors preserve consciousness that was there before. So, to answer your question, it seems likely that if we get the technology right, some Mitchell Green, whose mental neural information is loaded up into a server somewhere, down a little bit of help of a 3D flesh prisoner, something like that, out of body, that person would go around saying, I am Mitch.
And behave as if he's the same person as was existing until a computer, for example.
You also say a possible problem with this, that's true, but that's subjective, or personal point of view. I would just say, notice that if, as I go into a special cruise, for example, to have my brain uploaded on my body, because it's destroyed, to confusion, material retrieval, I might be not conscious about this process starts. So with the experience of the moment which I'm experiencing, that the end of me is unconscious, and then the new person, Mitch Green, Prime, Mitch Green, Star, I'm going to tell the tree, would say that, oh yeah, that's me, I remember that, that I thought that I had, you know, that happened so forth, et cetera, et cetera.
Was in your body experience a continuity?
And it doesn't seem like the answer is yes.
Well, what's subtle here, what's fussy is that they would probably, if that uploading downloading went well, they would be able to say that it was those things that from year to year, just to make sure. September 24th, this thing, this information that was on the server, is downloaded on anybody, and that person will start playing around saying, hi, Mitch, I'm back, and so forth. Notice, they would say, I remember that interview, I did that, I remember that, one of the most famous theories of personal time, that's John Locke, philosopher John Locke, is based on this idea of memory loops. And what's challenging about your theory, what's very attractive, is that difficulty of the difference between
Solipsism,
which is today, I remember what I did yesterday. I can't be sure I did it. All I know is today I have the memory of it, and how that memory came to be in my mind could be a number of different ways. It could be because I really did the thing, or because someone put the memory there.
Yeah, that's not what solipsism is about, it's about the other minds than my own. So if I'm a solipsist, I'm going to say, I've got doubts about whether there's any other consciousness. 16 years of racial grade.
Body into the machine, right? So in a sense, what does it mean to go into the machine?
I mean, go into the machine, I'm going to put your physical body in the machine. Here's the product. I'm going to go bodily to the machine. And then there will be a device that will feature your super MRI type thing. It scans my subcutaneous system, collects all the information from it, all the synaptic connections, and so forth, because you're lying or lie. My memory, you saw it, and my beliefs, and so forth. Upload it to a server. Now, in order to avoid confusion, I've got his body.
So let's end our conversation on that note. And of course, this is my view subject to revision, always, I like to say. We've been speaking with Professor of Philosophy Mitchell Green.
The book is Know Thyself, the Value and Limits of Self-Knowledge.
I really appreciate your time and insights today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure speaking. The fallout continues as a result of explosive allegations made against
Alt-right darling Russell Brand? I don't know. Is that exactly how to delineate the political movement, the COVID skeptical, the conspiratorial Russell Brand? I don't know. Okay.
Russell Brand.
He has been accused by multiple victims of sexual assault up to and including rape.
As well as all sorts of other horrible things.
The reaction, predictably, from many who are now politically aligned with him is that timing is all too convenient. This is meant to hurt the politically, this is for this reason, that reason, the other reason, but it certainly cannot be believed.
That is for damn sure.
Well, let's look at a couple of examples here.
Ben Shapiro, the Daily Wire right-wing commentator,
seems confused about the allegations, arguing that where it took place, Brand as a 30-year-old with a 16-year-old is not against the law by virtue of her age.
Except, of course, the problem is that the then 16-year-old is alleging sexual assault,
non-consensual contact. But Ben Shapiro is a little bit confused and running interference as best he can.
Alice Jamie have changed her identity now, realizing she wasn't fine. During a relationship that lasted for about 3 months when Brand was the radio presenter, says he referred to her as a child and alleges he became increasingly controlling and emotionally and sexually abusive. So at this time, Brand was 30 and she was apparently 16. Hey now. In the United States, crime.
In the UK,
not crime.
The age of consent.
In the UK, is 16. And apparently, Brand ascertained that she was 16 by asking her and checking.
Which means
scuzzy, scumbaggy behavior, sure.
Criminal behavior, no.
If you're again in the UK,
and the age of consent changes
from state to state, for the age of consent be 18.
But if you're not going to have that,
then that's what it is.
Okay. So Ben's argument seems to be
this is legal in other countries,
so therefore it's not an issue.
The only problem with this argument is
she's not alleging that he violated the age of consent.
She's alleging that he sexually assaulted her.
The crime is sexual assault.
This is very, very Trumpian.
I had a right to say whatever I wanted to say about the election,
and they're coming after me.
Right.
And that's in the indictment.
But you don't have a right to do whatever you want.
Like setting up slates of fake electors or pressuring officials to change the results.
Then you are conspiring to disenfranchise voters.
That's the crime.
Not saying I believe I won.
And similarly, she specifically alleges this alleged victim
of Russell Brands
alleges an incident of assault so severe
and so terrorizing
that she had to punch him in the stomach to try to get Brand off of her.
That crime is not based on her age.
Could be guilty or could not be guilty.
But let's not obfuscate this away.
The sexual assault is the problem.
And the theme and trend is
they always try to find a way to justify behavior or suggest that the allegations are overblown
or that they're not trustworthy,
which is a classic that they've been doing over the last 48 hours.
Now, to her credit,
there is one right-wing woman
who has actually said
there's a lot of evidence here,
and we're going to talk about that next.
Megyn Kelly, broken clocks are sometimes right,
is sending a message to right-wingers about the allegations against Russell Brand.
And the message she's sending is
there's a bunch of evidence that makes him look guilty as hell.
Those are my words.
Those aren't her words.
We're going to look at what her words actually are.
But here is Megyn Kelly saying,
the reflexive knee-jerk reaction
that these are all clearly lies.
Have you looked at the actual statements?
This is Megyn Kelly actually making some sense here.
Take a listen to this.
I realize that the knee-jerk instinct now by so many is Russell Brand is wrongly accused. These women are all liars.
I'm sorry, this is extremely detailed.
And in the case of the other woman, there's an actual set of medical records after she went to a rape crisis center.
The day of the alleged encounter, plus apologetic begging for forgiveness text from Russell Brand.
Could you please, for a second, stay open-minded to the possibility that the women are telling the truth?
Could you consider for a moment that false reporting of sexual assault is actually really rare?
And that maybe there is some truth to the allegations?
Doesn't mean that it's guilt beyond any doubt in a criminal court such that we imprison Brand.
Maybe there will be criminal charges, maybe not.
You've got to look at statutes of limitations, etc.
But maybe what's being alleged could be true.
Is that even possible?
Asks Megyn Kelly to her right-wing audience.
We don't need to correct from the Me Too movement that every woman gets completely disregarded and called a liar when she finds the guts to come forward and make an allegation.
They may be telling the truth.
It's worth investigating. We don't need to knee-jerk condemn him, and we don't need to knee-jerk condemn them.
I'm just pissed because what I've seen is like a rash of guys
coming out to be like,
I don't know whether it's bullshit or not.
Did you read the report of this woman?
Did you read the rape?
The alleged rape details?
Did you read the text message that she has from Russell Brand
begging for forgiveness?
There's at least enough for us to want more facts.
Right. Now, as with all of these cases,
It's very easy to fall into sort of black holes, into the weeds.
I don't even know what the right metaphor or analogy would be.
We have allegations.
Okay.
Allegations should be, number one, examined by the police to see are these credible allegations evidence, and is there a possible crime here? That's number one.
Number two, of course, everyone is presumed innocent until being found guilty from a criminal standpoint.
And also, as humans who exist in society,
We have every right to examine this in a court of public opinion as well,
understanding that we're not going to jail anybody on the basis of a verdict rendered in the court of public opinion.
As is always the case,
I am completely comfortable saying when there are false allegations of sexual assault,
That is a crime,
at least in most of the United States. Again, there's issues jurisdictionally here of the UK, but I'm not getting into that. But as I said before,
false allegations of sexual assault are extraordinarily rare
and should be punished seriously.
They should be taken seriously and prosecuted.
In this case, we are left to wonder,
why would a bunch of different women
be convinced, who would convince them to make up stories that involve rape crisis centers and paperwork that go back years,
along with corroborating apologetic texts from Russell Brand.
We start to get into the world of conspiracy by alleging that this was something that was fabricated.
Broken clocks can briefly be correct.
Megan Kelly is right.
The men she's addressing, the Jews she refers to.
I don't know that they're really going to listen to a word that she's saying.
I don't think that they want to hear it.
She might reach some folks on the right
that are stubbornly defending Russell Brand
and attacking the women is obviously lying and saying this is concocted because of Russell Brand's huge political influence now
and people want to take him down.
Of course, much like with the bribery allegations,
as of right now, we don't have any evidence.
And so the question at some point becomes,
okay,
we have a visit to a rape crisis center.
We have medical records.
We have apologetic text messages from Russell Brand.
Do we have any evidence for the conspiracy that this was all concocted to bring down Russell Brand because of his outsized and ever-growing political influence and COVID skepticism about supporting Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion?
At some point, they're going to have to present some evidence, but often what they get to is, no.
They've done a really good job covering up the evidence.
That's why we don't have any evidence,
and we're not going to have it.
Good for Megan Kelly to the extent that she's willing to probably be criticized pretty harshly by many of those dudes she refers to that follow her.
We have a voicemail number.
That number is 2192 David P.
Here is a hardcore Trump lady who called in,
and she's very upset with me,
as Trump ladies are often wont to do.
What world are you living in where the economy is great under Biden, like gas prices, for example? There's a gas station over by my house that goes down during the Trump administration, and the size of gas prices, too. It's like $2.50 for gas there. Now, looking at gas now, it goes all the way up to $3.99 here in Texas. Well, like dollar. Even $5 at one point. That was horrible.
Right.
And you think to yourself, the economy rate under the Trump administration. Look at all the great stuff that Trump has done, too.
Okay.
So a couple different things.
I don't have any problem admitting, it's weird to even say admitting.
I'm recognizing that many economic indicators were strong during much of the Trump administration,
and many economic indicators remain strong today under Biden,
and that it all has essentially been a continuation
of quite a strong economy
under Barack Obama.
The questions that are important to ask are,
what did any particular president do to either deserve credit or blame for a good versus bad economic indicator?
And as I said before, when it comes to gas prices, it has very little to do with presidents.
There are very few ways in which presidents can impact gas prices,
release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve,
which has a modest and short-term impact only.
A gas tax holiday can be done.
Invading a country with a bunch of oil and taking their oil.
What presidents can do is relatively limited.
And so much like I didn't assign credit or blame to gas prices during Trump's era to Trump,
and I'm not assigning credit or blame to Biden gas prices under Biden,
the economic indicators that I've talked about are not being mentioned by this caller.
And as is the case with every single one of these callers,
what do you mean the economy's doing okay?
No way, dude.
She doesn't cite any actual economic indicators that relate to the president even remotely.
Talk about
GDP,
talk about
unemployment, talk about labor participation rate, jobs created, inflation coming down,
on and on.
The economy is not perfect.
There are many gaps.
There are many problems. They're not unique to Joe Biden. Every time I hear this stuff, I wonder to myself,
do they
at any point sit back and say, wait a second, what the hell am I talking about?
What on earth am I talking about?
Maybe I will get informed to some degree.
I think the answer is no.
I think the answer is no.
We have a
fantastic bonus show for you today.
Hunter Biden,
after being reindicted, is now suing the IRS.
Why?
We will discuss it.
A Danish artist
has been ordered to repay a museum after delivering blank canvases,
which some are saying
is proof of the debasement of modern, contemporary, and avant-garde art.
But others are saying,
the blank canvases, the choice of shape and texture and size,
it is art in a sense.
We will discuss it.
A favorite topic among the audience,
I know.
And lastly,
many are furious
that the Senate is ditching its dress code,
that Senator John Fetterman is showing up in hoodies, and if you can imagine,
he wore shorts one day.
Some people like it, some people don't.
The moral majority is very much against it
because it just looks bad and it's not good.
And what will our children think if they see a hoodie in the Senate?
All right.
We will discuss that so much more
when producer Pat joins me on today's bonus show.
Don't miss it.
Sign up at joinpatman.com.
We start today with the impeachment of President Joe Biden.
Of course, it's not happening right now.
Republicans are launching an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden.
Congresswoman Nancy Mace went on CNN last week,
was asked for evidence,
and said,
We don't have it.
That's why we're doing the inquiry to look for the evidence.
This made no sense.
She was roundly humiliated.
Hundreds of thousands of you watched our clip on the matter
and widely thought this is a very strange way to pursue the truth by saying,
we don't have evidence, but let's investigate someone and see what we find.
Well, Nancy Mace apparently has not gotten any better talking points over the weekend.
Because she went back on TV yesterday, was interviewed on ABC,
and she still has no evidence nor any semblance of evidence.
Let's take a look at what she had to say.
This is difficult to watch.
Let me also ask you before you go, the impeachment inquiry that McCarthy announced,
even though he had said he wouldn't do it without a vote, and a few days later he does it without a vote. I want to read you something that Ken Barkley, your Republican colleagues, had to say in the Washington Post. Of the impeachment inquiry. He said impeachment is a serious matter and should have a foundation of rock solid facts. Trump's impeachment in 2019 was a disgrace. The Constitution is a disservice to Americans. The GOP's reprise in 2023 is no better. He says these allegations by the family are an imagined history and a fictitious version of events. Was this premature going all the way with an impeachment inquiry?
I don't believe that the facts are everywhere. There are text messages, there are emails, there are witnesses, there are whistleblowers. There are meetings, there are phone calls, there are dinners.
And you can't say, hey, we're not going to follow the fire.
And the inquiry, my understanding is, as you said earlier, gives us expanded subpoena powers.
I want the bank records of Joe Biden.
All of that should be on the table to prove out the allegations of the SARS reports.
We're talking about a significant sum of money.
We are talking about bribery.
And in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 4,
There's no evidence of bribery.
There are witnesses, 1023 form.
You've been investigating, you're on the open.
It would take us an hour to go through all of the lies.
There are witnesses in the 1023 form, witnesses they can't find, or who upon being found said,
I actually never spoke to Joe Biden.
The bottom line is the analogy she's using.
There are all of these examples of smoke.
And so at some point,
you've got to wonder,
Is there smoke because there's fire?
Except
imagine that it's not really smoke, it's water vapor. And you go,
water vapor actually isn't
indicative of fire.
It's water vapor.
That's what's going on here. Now, I promise to you, when I have made this promise before, and I will make it again proudly and strongly.
If they find evidence against Joe Biden, either through the fishing expedition, or outside of it,
I will tell you.
Hunter Biden is now being prosecuted again.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of W.C. Petersburg and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Any involvement of a foreign government killing a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil is an unacceptable violation of our sovereignty. It is contrary to the fundamental rules by which free, open, democratic societies conduct themselves.
Tension is escalating between Canada and India. After Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau accused Asian Canadians of assassinating a prominent Canadian Sikh leader outside a temple in British Columbia in June. We'll get the latest. Then to the case of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's close rope in the Biden administration to halt its prosecution of the imprisoned journalist. We'll speak to Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, calling on the U.S. to free Assange. By the message of democracy,
lifting up the process, if he could pardon the path to tell the journalists doing their job as journalists should not be kept prisoner, even if it is in the interests of U.S. power.
We'll also hear from the Brazilian President Lula. And meet to an Australian senator who's just flown into Washington, D.C. as part of the delegation to lobby the U.S. to abandon its plan to extradite Julian Assange from Britain. That two indigenous leader Winona LaDuke and Judge Minnesota has thrown out criminal charges against her and two other water defenders who were arrested for protesting at the construction site of Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline.
It's been heartbreaking for us to undergo this trauma. Of all of these years of facing this corporation. And to have a judge say that to criminalize us further would be a crime. That caused us all to kind of cry.
Where women want clean water. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org,
The War and Peace Report.
I'm Amy Goodman.
Authorities in Nagorno-Karabakh say they've accepted a Russian-proposed ceasefire one day after Azerbaijan launched a military operation in the contested territory.
Peace talks between Azerbaijan and Armenia are scheduled to start Thursday.
Yesterday's attack reportedly killed close to 100 people and injured hundreds more. Tensions have been growing in Nagorno-Karabakh in recent months as Azerbaijani forces sealed off its only road linking it to major fuel and medical shortages, as well as accusations of genocide. Nagorno-Karabakh is overwhelmingly populated by Armenian Armenians, but is recognized as Azerbaijani territory as part of a Russia-brokered ceasefire following the 2020 war. Protesters gathered in Armenia's capital Yerevan on Tuesday.
I hope that finally they can find any solution to this problem.
Solution that can satisfy both sides and we can live peacefully.
That's my opinion.
I know it's difficult.
It cannot be a decision which will satisfy both sides.
But we should come to that.
Otherwise it will continue and hundreds of thousands of innocent people will die.
During the protests, police used stun grenades to disperse crowds trying to enter a government building. Israeli forces killed 19-year-old Palestinian Durkan al-Akhras during a raid near Jericho in the occupied West Bank earlier today. His grieving father decried his killing.
He's not our citizen. A child is not